Welcome to the Local Point. My name is Andrew Day and I'm the Conservative Group Leader at Warwick District Council. This is an informal kitchen table conversation with people who are shaping the policies and programs touching lives right across the district. Together, we'll be thrashing through some of the real issues we're working on that affect all corners of our local community. Welcome, everybody. We're back at the Local Point at 1 Mill Street. It's Friday afternoon and the place is buzzing yet again. Very chilly outside, as we are, of course, in January, but much warmer inside, I must say. But we have the Seckhams here. We have Izzy and Philip Seckham. Thank you both so much for joining us for the Local Point today. I'm just commenting what a joy it is to get all the diaries to align and actually get you here and see you face to face. So thank you so much for coming in. Today, we're going to talk about your extraordinary contributions to Warwickshire, both individually and as a couple, but more particularly, I think you could talk to us a bit about your story, what got you here, and I really want to draw that out. So when people are thinking about how they can serve this community, there are so many different roles. You two fill two very important roles, but it's important that we get people, encourage them, if you like, to be part of our civic society. So look, the story is a fascinating one. I was doing a bit of research beforehand, and I'm going to embarrass you slightly in the sense that, Izzy, I'm going to start with you. You've been leader at the county council for over 10 years now, am I correct?
That would be right, 2013, I think it was.
And what got you into being a county councillor? Oh. How did you get the bug?
I know. And I have to say, here's a little little warning and a nudge to those women out there. So often women get asked to do it rather than bring themselves forward. And I was exactly, hands up, I was one of those people. So I was asked, we had a gap. Just coming at the time, and I think Philip persuaded me. We'd always been kind of involved in local politics, and I think Philip and somebody else, I think it was a pincer movement, actually, I blame them, and they did it.
They ganged up on me.
Yeah. And then once I'd sort of said, well, I might if there was nobody else, I then started thinking, well, actually, I'd probably quite like to, yeah, I think I could do this, and you don't think about these things.
No.
And actually, you know, if you just dip your toe in the water, you'd never know how exciting it might be out there.
So it's Shipston-on-Stour is your seat, is that correct?
It's called Stour in the Vale.
I beg your pardon.
The River Stour
yes.
runs right the way through it.
Yeah.
And the Vale of the Red Horse used to be part of it, but actually now, you know, they keep realigning boundaries, and it's not quite, but it's part of the view. So
indeed, yes. But it's those little steps. So you were the pincer movement. I like this. You were persuaded, so to speak. And Philip's obviously got a guilty party here, but to get involved, and then from there, I don't expect you immediately got involved. Thought right, I'm going to lead the whole county council. But I really the adult social services area particularly took your interest, if I recall.
Well, it's quite interesting. So right at the very beginning, my group, the Conservative group, we were actually in opposition for the first 4 years that I was a councillor. And, you know, it was a learning curve.
Yeah.
Gosh, was it a learning curve. I mean, you know, I felt I was learning a new language, really.
It is
a new language, you know, it's public sector speak. So, you know, I always thought I am not going to be one of those people. But anyway, I'm probably am, but trying hard not to be. So that was 4 years of learning really what the county council does, and it is quite enormous. I mean, so big a remit. And then, you know, I got involved in children's services, actually. So the first 5 years, I was the portfolio holder for children, which I did really love, you know, so much around education, safeguarding, looked after,
adoption
and foster, absolutely. I used to get involved in the adoption panel and, you know, once a month I would have papers about as high as my arm and have to read through them and remember them.
Yeah, and remember them.
Yes.
So Philip, do you, you know, when you look back at this moment of getting Izzy across the line and getting involved, could just focus on that. Has it fundamentally changed your life together, being both in public life?
I think it has. I mean, Izzy ran a business beforehand, so she's always been busy.
Yeah.
That's the best person to be a politician, indeed, in my view. And I think she had some knowledge about politics. I'd always been involved. I come from a very political family.
Mm-hmm.
Izzy's not quite so. I was a bit nervous to start with, but I think it was the proverbial duck to water.
Yeah.
And obviously she hasn't looked back since.
No, quite.
And I'm very proud of her.
Yeah. But you say you come from a very political family. Indeed you do. But focusing particularly on yourself, you've also had a strong public service career. Mm. You were an officer in the territorial you're a commanding officer, weren't you? For 25 years, I think, your service. That's quite something, I know from my own experience with the TA in Australia. And then also a Stratford District Councillor.
I was. I did that for 15 years.
Wow.
And then I ran a business for 25 years.
Right.
So I don't know what the qualification for either a councillor or a PCC, for that matter, is, but I think a bit of a knowledge about finance, big organisations,
indeed,
and how to engage with the public, I think, helped.
Yeah, of course. And understanding the people element is a big part of the equation. Yes. And then what you then stood to be our Police and Crime Commissioner.
I did. Now
I'm going back. Is it
2016?
16
was the first,
it was, that's
yes,
right.
Yes.
Feels like a long time ago now.
Lots happened since.
And what got you there? Were you also, did Izzy gang up on you that time around? Or how did you get persuaded? Because it was a relatively new role, was it not?
It was. I mean, I was keen to do something. I was coming up to sort of the end of my working life, I think, probably in my 60s. And I felt there's something else needs doing. There was a vacancy. There was an independent who preceded me. And plainly there was a move in the party to try and win it and indeed keep it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I was cajoled, but so it was a little bit of... I was keen to do it and got selected and away it went.
So for the benefit, I mean, and I still struggle trying to understand some of your role, if you don't mind me saying, a Police and Crime Commissioner is, it's all of Warwickshire. So there's our 600,000, obviously a good match between you both now in that domain. Yep. But what you don't go and put parking tickets on people's cars, obviously. What's your role in that against the Chief Constable?
I mean, the first thing is I'm not an operational police officer. I haven't had the experience or the training. So it's very much a strategic role.
Yeah.
A lot of working with other partners like Warwick District or Warwickshire County Council to sort of smooth those wheels. And there's the holding to account role, and that is where my bosses are the residents of Warwickshire who elected me. So I have a mandate, I think, to challenge the force on behalf of residents and communities as well, to try and improve the service, point out good things, point out perhaps where there are some challenges and there are some weaknesses. And plainly, one of my big duties I'm doing at the moment is to set the budget for the force. So it's a budget of about 150 million, of which half comes from the Home Office and half comes from our council taxpayers. So the decision I have to take, depending on what we get from the government, is what is reasonable to charge our council taxpayers.
But you've come in, if I recall, with some very clear thoughts around wanting to grow our resource and put more bobbies on the beat, so to speak. Yeah. I know that's a bit of a cliche in the modern police force terms, but that's been quite a program and a big, big achievement.
It has, and obviously we were helped by the government's 20,000, which paid for about half of our increased numbers. The other half came from our council taxpayers.
But we've got more police now, have we not, in Warwickshire than we've ever had,
and we're going to have a few more next year as well.
Very good. Okay.
They're quite expensive. Police officers.
Of course.
So we're going to have another 10, and what we're going to do is we're going to put 5 of those 10 equivalent of into town centre policing.
Right.
That places like Leamington,
right,
where businesses are concerned about the lack of presence. Visibility is really the biggest thing that residents complain to me about. So plainly, more officers in uniform helps. And town centres, particularly, there's a lot of antisocial behaviour. County lines, drug dealing, all sorts of things where we want one specific police constable to be responsible for liaising with everybody and coordinating partnership activity.
So true, and the partnerships are so important. And that's in a way, if you don't mind, I guess your pillow talk must be fascinating at times. Sorry, I didn't. But we do see a lot of couples in public life, don't we? I know in the district and at county and others county councillors, and it's quite. I'm just thinking.
There is interesting. There are some.
Do you have
topics?
rules?
Yes, there
rules
are some.
No, don't talk about.
We definitely
about.
Do. Yeah, I do.
You do.
But we have areas where we just don't discuss because, I mean, potential conflicts.
No, that's quite right. And also, you need to have a balance in life, I'm sure.
I think it's easier for me in some ways because I've got a team around me. I've got cabinet and I've got a group and all of that. He's a sole operator.
I'm the sole decision maker.
And I think in life, it's really good to have people to bounce those visionary thoughts, you know, those strategy ideas off and feel if you're getting it right.
Yeah.
And I think you do.
I think leadership can be quite lonely in any big organization.
Very true. Mm-hmm.
We've got about 2,000 employees and they probably look to me to make sure that they are their wealth, health and welfare and everything's cared for, that they're properly commanded and everything. So it can be quite lonely, but I think that's a privilege to be able to influence. Mm. And I think I can and do have quite a significant effect on people's daily lives. So it is a job I find very rewarding on that basis.
It strikes me too, in the background that you bring to that job, that the capacity to command soldiers is no easy achievement, particularly in the role that you played as colonel. And I think that shouldn't be lost in the scheme of things. But then also the business component, understanding how people's day-to-day, the impact that crime has on people's day-to-day lives. Yeah. And I know you've taken particular care and focus around the victims of crime and the support that you, as Police and Crime Commissioner, can offer there. You make grants, for example, don't you?
We do. We're just finalising them at the moment.
And what does that entail? Can you talk a bit about
it? We spend about $2.8 million a year on commission services, which are those services that are 3 to 5 year contracts, and then we have some annual grants, which are mainly for projects rather than just add to someone's bottom line.
Could you give an example? Project.
Yes, I mean there's an organisation I'm sure you've heard of in Warwick called Helping Hands.
Yes,
so we've part funded them for a project they wanted to do with ex-offenders, which is what they're trying to stop that sort of
break
vicious
cycle
of people going in and out of prison.
Yeah.
And all around the county. I mean, that's just like one local example.
Yeah. But it's those interventions, and I guess you provide something of a bridge, don't you, between the residents and if you like, the force itself and how to focus and fine-tune to get the best outcomes.
We get a lot of correspondence and sort of questions and comments from the public, and I think I need to understand what the general feeling is. But it's interesting. I think as a society, we are slightly polarizing and people are getting a bit more extreme in their views, often expressed through social media.
Yes.
So my job is, and I've always feel that I act for the silent majority, and I think you probably know what I mean by that.
I do indeed. But those partnerships are important, Izzy, and we know that very much, don't we? I mean, your role over 10 years as leader, it is 10 years now, I think as a former leader of Warwick District, it was just 4 years. It felt like 40 sometimes. It's a really, really big job. You're juggling at various domains and levels, the partnership work you must have to do, because you've got 600,000 people. So Warwickshire's a very diverse place, much more diverse than people realise, I think.
I think that's right. But I look upon it too, that people choose to live, you know, in Warwickshire. You and I have talked about this on many occasions. And for various reasons, you know, one, it might be family, it might be work, it might be just, you know, they've stuck a pin in a map just because of access or something. But, you know, at the end of the day, their biggest investment in life is in, you know, where they bring up their families and where they choose to spend that time. And I sort of feel that the privilege of leadership of a county council, and you know, you will have felt the same too, leading the district, is that we're place shapers.
That's
so
true.
We are about, you know, what is it that I am just another taxpayer. I am an ordinary person, and I find myself in this position, and I just want to try to do what I think families want, which is to make the place they live in nice, vibrant, somewhere they feel confident to bring up their family, grow old in, you know, an exciting place for businesses to operate. So, you know, we want a vibrant economy in this place too. So it's, I don't think you want to try to make all of it look the same. I think you want that unique separation and differences that the South brings, that the North brings, and, you know, the culture that that all engenders, which makes Warwickshire great.
And I've seen you operate with different types of partners. I've seen you work, for example, with government ministers in making the case for Warwickshire, and partnerships, for example, with Andy Street in the West Midlands, where, you know, you serve on there as well as a portfolio holder. And similarly, obviously, with the Police and Crime Commissioner, I'm sure you can get reasonable access to have a chat with him from time to time. But also, we've got, you've all the districts and boroughs to attend to. And then, of course, with...
And all our health colleagues.
All the health colleagues.
Yes, and that's lots.
And then through COVID.
Yeah. Yes.
What happened to our lives there?
That was a bit different, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. But all the you know, the work that was done in getting the resilience forums working and the door-to-door support.
Never did partnership need to be done quicker, better, and you know, get out the stuff quickly. So it's important. And it's so interesting, Andrew, because... when I did first get elected, actually, we didn't do partnerships half as much. I mean, really hardly. You know, the county council did services.
Yes.
And people, you know, accessed that, and that's what you got. Yeah. And I don't think we, at that time, sat back, captured the voice of people and whether it made a difference to them, whether the money being spent actually improved their lives, whether it was what they wanted. And boy, have we changed over that time. You know, it's all about, you know, we're not spending money unless it's going to improve people's life chances, what they're after. And, you know, also, we didn't do partnerships. So now everything we do is in partnership. So decisions that I make at the county council is going to have an impact on district, on health, on all of those that you mentioned.
And it's the quid pro quo, the cooperation, understanding what the objectives are across different authorities. And I most keenly saw you working, for example, with Andy Street on the investment zone we've got coming up to
exciting.
You know, Coventry or Baggington Airport, as I say.
Very much.
And that is going to make an enormous difference if you look at the longer-term economy of Warwickshire.
Yes, exactly.
And that was such an important bit of trading, both with the West Midlands Combined Authority, with the government, getting all the districts and boroughs lined up.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's quite a tricky jigsaw, I think.
But it's worth billions of pounds.
It will be.
That will be felt 30 years from now, you know.
And the time that we spent at that point in time is nothing compared with, you know, the decades of what it will produce and the life opportunities for young people. I mean, there are going to be jobs that you and I have never even imagined sitting there that our children are going to be accessing. And we as a council need to help businesses to, you know, find places like this, where they can start sort of shaping all those exciting new ideas.
Yeah.
Because I want us to be the flag wavers there.
And to follow on with partnerships, my job is about working. I mean, I chair a number of boards, meetings, which are with partners, the local criminal justice board, with the courts, with the Crown Prosecution Service, probation, victims' organisations. Another one, in fact, we very much work jointly with the county council, is the Safer Warwickshire.
Yeah.
Yes.
A road partnership.
Yeah.
And that is jointly funded. And it's very much a partnership exercise. And, you know, in road safety, there are different elements to it, which certainly the policing can do one, but obviously... highway authority needs to be involved as well.
Definitely does. And all the emergency services elements together, the blue light, I think you call them. But dealing, I was quite taken because we are very dominated by motorways in Warwickshire.
Yeah, we do.
You know, there's a lot of service calls, I'm sure, for the officers to attend.
It is. And because we're in the middle of the country, a lot of our crime is imported from outside of Warwickshire.
Oh, right.
It's so easy to access.
Okay.
With the six motorways we've got.
Okay.
So we have to work. We have to work very closely with neighbouring and other forces.
Yeah.
And
you even work with district councils on that with our CCTV, for example.
Correct, yes. Yes, we've just managed to get just under £1 million, which we have given all to districts and boroughs.
Brilliant.
To improve their CCTV.
Oh, well, that's good news. Yeah. Very good news, because it is a big investment. But I as leader was taken in, I think I may have shared this with you, but to see the showreel with the CCTV team in the town hall, down in the bunker in the town hall.
I visited.
And they take you through, and they showed me this amazing piece where it's rather inebriated student was crossing the road. It could be any one of us, I'm sure. But he was actually hit by a driver in a little Ford car, and they tracked the car. So they called, they saw him, and he rolled over the top of the car.
Yeah.
And, and they got the ambulance out to deal with him, and then followed the car where it parked, called, and the police came round to speak to the driver, who had no recollection of actually having this accident and was absolutely mortified.
Who was inebriated.
I suspect maybe, but the point, the CCTV just connected all the dots, and I thought that student was safer.
You know. Like all our information technology, you never stop. It keeps going, keeps improving.
It does.
But it is a significant investment for all local authorities.
Going digital was a big one, but that partnership work, is that's a live person, an example we can probably...
And I think our residents expect us to work closely with all the partners as well. So I don't think it's rocket science, but people always ask me, am I working on any particular subject with other partners? And of course we are.
Well, but the community safety broadly is an issue. It can be affected by housing and how you support communities to be healthier and to deal with, to that point about importing crime. You mentioned county lines earlier, and the really unnerving rise in knife crime and murders, and some of the very young people.
I mean, Warwick is still very safe place to be.
By comparison, when you sit down with other
forces, but it's not acceptable. You know, we had a murder in this last year, in Leamington, and I don't know. There's an investigation going on, so I can't say what caused it, but I probably got a good idea what it was.
Yeah,
and our safer neighbourhood teams—they're the ones who probably people see most of all with the officers and the PCSOs.
So who's on a safer neighbourhood team? What does that entail?
Well, we have 33 across the county.
Okay.
So I would, there's probably 7 or 8 in Warwick District.
Okay.
One which will be a town centre. Normally 1 or 2 officers and 1 or 2 PCSOs make up that small team. But their job is to engage with everybody.
Right.
Starting with schools and local authorities.
Yes.
Housing associations.
Yes, of course.
Local GPs and National Health, everybody, to try and solve particular problems. And County Lines is plainly one of those.
And then, of course, we've got 6,000 students in Leamington, which is a brilliant part of this community. Yeah, and I really like the vibe. I miss them when they go away on their summer holidays. Yeah. It suddenly gets quiet, and I just sort of reminds myself that the end of the term's come. But they too have particular needs. We've got, I call it locus parentis. You know, I remember sending my own children away to university, and actually welcoming towns do provide a bit of a safety net. And I think we do our best, don't we, on the weekend?
We do, and there's good bus services to the uni and
indeed.
Things like that.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah.
But it's important, very, very important. Yeah. But is he, so in the future, I mean, we're gazing ahead for Warwickshire.
Mm-hmm.
What's coming? I mean, we've talked about the work we're doing, obviously, with the Westminster Combined Authority. Where do you see Warwickshire and its vision for the future?
Yeah, it's
big question.
It is a very big question. And it is a, I mean, it's a big question. And financially, I think as we sit here, all councils are finding it very tough.
Yeah.
There are some, you know, we are driven, you know, we're in the middle of our budget setting process. And, you know, next month we'll see our budget meeting at which we'll set that. And I don't think in all the time I've been at the council we've ever had such a very difficult period of trying to do budgeting, largely because we are being driven by demand services, and in particular I'm thinking of children's services, special education needs, adult social care, and, you know, homeschool transport.
Of course.
Massive, absolutely massive. And you know, special education needs is an area where it is just, it's like mushrooms growing in the dark. You know, there's no brakes on this. It's just growing and growing and growing. And it came to us with, you know, the legislation change in 2014, which, you know, I would argue the serious consequence of that we are now feeling. And it isn't Warwickshire, it's every council that's dealing with it.
Yes.
And, you know, you've seen quite a number of them who are, you know, in financial difficulties, you know, right on our doorstep. We have Birmingham. Warwickshire's definitely not there.
No.
But, you know, we've made the tough decisions over the years, which has allowed us cushions to get to that point. But the demand services are what are received by a few people. And when I say that, that's, you know, the social care actually is a huge piece of our budget. And roughly on an annual basis, we spend this big proportion of our, you know, well over 50% of our budget on adult social care for about 11,000 people out of 600,000. It's difficult. It could be you, could be me next time. So, you know,
it's an important service, but it's an expensive service.
Very important. Yeah. And what we have to do is always be trying to find better ways of doing it, how we could make savings or how we could do it better. But also, you know, generally speaking, people want to be as independent as they can for as long as they can.
Of course.
And we have to be, you know, observant of that. So I'm always trying to manage the, you know, universal services are the things that everyone should have. Roads, you know, the highway stuff, the libraries, the waste, this, that and the other. And they are, you know, under pressure from these other demand services. So we so have to make that make
really
sense.
Really tough calls there when
Very
you're trying
much.
To sort of fine-tune a budget for, you know, adult social care against potholes or, you know, from a political perspective. I'm thinking, what a conundrum.
Oh, yeah.
That's a tough one.
And if you go out to consultation, which we do, every time the first and top thing on everyone's list is state of the roads, potholes.
Really? Okay.
Usually because I'm going out at this time of the year.
Yes.
When it's just been very wet and we've got...
They're the worst.
But no, it is anyway.
But we did pretty well on potholes, I thought. I think we got pretty good national scores on
Well, I have to say,
potholes.
The one thing... when I did first become leader, I'd had a sort of cabinet meeting with another authority, and they'd cut their highway budget over years, and what they did say to me is that was a big mistake, because it just, every time it goes backwards, the gap gets bigger. And you know, they then ended up having to borrow masses of money
to catch up
again. So we made that decision, we will never cut that highway maintenance budget, and we haven't overinvested in it, but you know, we have never done that, and so we're still gritting 46% of our roads
out there at the moment. I know,
and it's part of how we keep an economy going, because
it is.
If you have a road that gets tied up with an accident, you know, one, it costs all of our emergency services a lot, but two, these people are not getting to work and they are not productive.
But it's the stitch in time saves nine sort of adage, isn't it? That really, that's a perfect example of it. But I'm amazed at the costs of things. People, I don't think, fully appreciate. I mean, Warwick District Council, for example, has a responsibility simply to clear the litter on the side of the A46, I think, from, you know, wherever it is, the Coventry or somewhere up there, all the way down to Junction 15 on the M40. £50,000 for one litter pick.
Oh, my goodness.
£50,000.
And on top of that, you've got all the fly tipping.
And then all the fly tipping, and you go, it's tough making choices.
Yeah.
But that's, it's interesting that partnership, and you both expressed it there, between being, if you like, representatives, ordinary residents, representatives of the residents, that connection with the people.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the paid professionals, our officers, whether they're police constables or local government officers, who are experts in their field, are very, very good. But it is that partnership that is where the magic comes, I think.
I think you can unlock it
and make it positive.
And the point is so well made, because, you know, I have a view that actually what your place looks like is how you feel about it as well. So it's important how it presents itself. So, you know, it is very difficult to think, 50,000 a time on
I know,
that.
Just for litter.
It's really
I
difficult.
Mean, please just don't throw the stuff out the windows. Really.
No, ownership working sounds easy. It isn't actually, because everybody's got their own expertise. They want to be able to get on with it. That's what they're paid to do. But
got their own
so I spend my time saying if we can do it together, we'll all do a better job.
We will.
And that's what it's about.
And absolutely. It does take that call, if you like, to say, come on, step back here. We really need to focus on the greater good.
Absolutely, try and sort of cut through some of the bureaucratic minefields
Did you watch Prime Minister and
how wonderful was that?
Absolutely love that. And people thought there was just some sort of fictional piece of writing. I swear, that is just so many moments, isn't it?
Where
you just go, I can't believe that. So, Humphrey, could you
say? Very brave decision.
Very brave was a good one. That's a good line.
Love that.
You know, back on finance, I mean, all police forces have got financial challenges. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of my jobs is to look ahead. To look at policing in 5, 10, 15 years' time, to build that picture, to make their savings in the right place without affecting sort of frontline effectiveness. And we made a difficult decision four years ago now, where we saved £4 million in 1 year. We're now over that 4 years, that's actually saved a taxpayer £16 million, £4 million a year, because it compounds. And I think that's important in any leadership role in a public sector is you must understand what the consequences of what you do now are into the future.
And also it is people's money. This isn't some money magicked from a tree, and I think often forgotten. That's our role sometimes to remind them that it's coming out of people's back pocket now to fund this service. And we've got to make sure there's value.
And people say, well, that's government money. Well, actually, government money is taxpayers' money. It's our money as well.
Yeah. But it's that fine balance, because in both cases, you've got a number, I don't know how many people in county council employ, but you both, it's a lot of people working, and it's a competitive market trying to attract good people.
Absolutely.
You're training people as well, and you're running apprenticeship schemes, and you've got people going, officers going through formal qualifications, I'm sure, and retaining the best is a challenge, you know, and weeding out those that you're not.
And I'm often discussing with the Chief Constable, in effect, Warwickshire Police are a monopoly supplier. You can't ring up and go to another police force.
No, it's true.
So there's a great responsibility on the force to provide, you know, an excellent service without competition. I think that's instilled, I think, in Warwickshire Police that, you know, they call us because they can't call anybody else, and they often call us because they're in trouble. They want help.
I think it's an interesting question, though, about I've always had this belief that, you know, we want the best people working for Warwickshire, and part of that is, you know, your ethos, the way you behave as councillors, as you know, management and corporate board. Respect is the highest word in my dictionary. I think, you know, how councillors respect each other, how we behave in the chamber. You know, I'm absolutely not a Westminster politics type of person. I think it's brings us all down.
It does.
And
no question.
And I the one thing that I'm immensely proud of is the people who come to work for Warwickshire always say, always without fault, say the culture is so nice and pleasant to be there, and they feel empowered.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, okay, it starts with, you know, how we demonstrate and behave ourselves. It also starts with the top civil servants, and we have to feed that down because, you know, I mean, this is such an important thing. It's people's lives, where they spend their day. I want them in Warwickshire, the best people.
Yeah.
And I think that's right.
That makes the services better.
Indeed it does. And it's not just about money.
No,
any question is not always money. It's
how you invest
culture.
In people.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's the same in policing. I mean, I've always, since I became... I think probably policing is the most scrutinised public service of the lot. And, of course, a lot of crimes go unreported because residents, particularly domestic violence victims, don't have the confidence that the police will do a proper job. So the job is never done. We've always got to work at that confidence with victims or those who are under threat of being a victim, that they have the confidence to report, and that response will be exactly as they would expect.
And the challenge so often is that residents and the public will have a perception which doesn't always match the reality. So there'll be a perception, for example, that there's a high crime situation when in fact it's just because we're all getting a bit older and a bit more fearful. But actually, the numbers don't support that. Equally, if people don't feel confident in reporting crime, then you can't allocate or encourage your team
see,
to
we
allocate
live in a village,
the right resources.
And you live in a village, and sort of 10, 20 years ago, if somebody was burgled, probably no one else would know about it.
No.
Now the whole community knows about it within a few minutes.
Facebook is
on the local Facebook account.
So that, I think, not always, but can distort the perception of safety in a community. It's probably the same in the street in Leamington or Warwick.
Yeah. It's true.
So all the time, I always think that people ring 999 because they need help. And, you know, we monitor closely the response and the plainly the time it takes to respond, but also the quality of that response. And I'd look very seriously at letters from victims who've been through the process, perhaps they've been to court and everything. What were their experiences? What they think could be improved?
Because it's the other part, often not properly understood, is our magistrates' courts and the way the court system works. And also, frankly, how long things can take get through the courts and how much officer time must be consumed just, you know, treading water to go through the court system.
And there's lots of areas of waste. I mean, I don't like to see police officers sitting outside A&E for 6 hours while somebody who is, in effect, under arrest is treated medically and that sort of thing. But, yeah, you've got to... I think you just have to have a proportionate response. You know?
Yeah, indeed.
I think people realise the police, you know, they're not magicians. But they can point people in the right direction. And interestingly, we think about a third of the calls that come in on into our control centre have nothing to do with crime.
Really?
Yeah.
A third?
A lot of it's mental health type issues.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, they're the silly ones, you know, where's my nearest takeaway? People ring 999 and have asked that.
It's just priceless.
But it's principally missing persons.
Yes.
A considerable drain on resource and other... not really crimes, but issues where somebody needs help. And, you know, I think that's part of the police's job is to help. And often it's the last resort.
Last resort when they come and call you. But also you, in a sense, those partnerships come to play there, don't they?
They do.
Whether it's Helping Hands, you mentioned, or Samaritans or whatever, you've got those points of, you know, reference to actually...
I mean, one of the other boards I set up was the Warwickshire Blue Light Collaboration, where I was really pleased to get police, fire and ambulance. We've actually got the Mental Health Trust on there now as well.
Brilliant.
And there needs to be a lot closer working
with
those sorts of organisations to help protect people. And
And getting to the problems earlier, as we and get the right resource, it really does make a big difference to the long term.
Well, I think policing is moving more to prevention, a bit like the health service is doing, I think, rightly, rather than waiting for the problems to occur. So there's a lot more effort going into prevention, but people have to help themselves as well, and be that anti-burglary or whatever potential crime they could be a victim of. We encourage people to help themselves and indeed communities.
So Neighbourhood Watch, is that something you're...
Yes, we fund Neighbourhood Watch in Warwickshire.
And are you seeing, is that being well supported? How's that going? I mean, it seems like...
It's like any voluntary organisation.
You get
a local group, someone really good sets it up and gets it all going. Then they move for business reasons or something, then it sort of goes. But no, it's in good health. They do a lot of good prevention work around, and I always recommend any community or individual, if they're worried about crime in their area, either get going or join.
Well, it's that old adage, you know, if you're not prepared to do it yourself, who else? I mean, I got involved. We, as you know, in Bishop Satchbrook, because I've been on at you about this, have real issues with speeding. And, over the years, a group of us have got together and formed a community speed watch.
Excellent
initiative. And we were well-trained and... We go out. We're properly patrolling, and the letters go out to those who you know. But a funny story was for me, I wasn't on one particular patrol, and of course, then my wife was caught going and got one of these letters, and of course, the whole patrol were all thought this was hilarious, you know. It does two things.
Absolutely.
One is it makes a community feel that they can actually affect their own community because they can help themselves. And they get to know the police and understand the partnership again. But the other side to it is it reminds people that when they do these things, they're actually going through someone's village. You know, this is where kids play. and
absolutely,
and the whole point
it matters.
Is
people care.
I personally would like to see speed watches having the power to issue fines and tickets, but they don't. So what they can do, though, is remind people that they are speeding, that it is antisocial, and that's often it's interesting the story you tell, because often I go to quite a lot of speed watches when I can go out with them, and they say we keep catching people we know.
Yes. I know.
They're the people that are speeding. They're the people who need to slow down.
But it's just a reminder. With all despair, I've got my notice from time, and it's just not. You're thinking about something else. You're not really conscious, and before you know it, you're over the speed limit, and boom.
It's life. But you know, very often the people in one village who are complaining about speeding traffic through are doing it
in the next village.
And we all, it's education. Speeding is about education.
But you know, is it, you'll enjoy this bit because your highways team. So the data we got, English. We got from these speed watches, we collected and we saw the average speed and so on. We were then able to take and make a case to the highways team to get a raised table put into an effect. And then we did the speed watch afterwards. They loved it. We collected all the data again, showed the mean average speed had come down by this much, validated the investment, job done. But isn't that a partnership? And it shows
the parish council couldn't do that on their own.
You helped yourselves.
Indeed.
As well.
It validates that the public money being spent is actually achieving something.
I think that's absolutely right. You know, I think so often people are quick to pick the phone up and think someone else can solve a problem without first thinking actually, have I got a part to play?
Yes.
And you know, we all have a part to play in trying to improve our communities.
That's so true. And it's actually been demonstrated by the fact that, you know, how much time I wouldn't want to add it up, that you both give in the roles that you play. This isn't your full-time job as such. You're doing it in addition to your, I know it feels like a full-time job. But
I think it is.
Yeah, it feels like, I know the hours I did as lead at Warwick District, and I go, trying to run a business, it's just mad. But if it's a mindset, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you feel that it is your community and you're encouraged to play a role in the areas you're keen on, then it's not about parking a problem somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I think one of the duties of any leader is to look at the future and the people of the future. And I'm often saying to people, I think you'd make a really good counsellor or volunteer somewhere. And I think we have a duty to do that, just talent spot, if you like.
It's true.
So that there is a future there, and there is, you know, that people can have confidence in and trust.
Yeah, indeed.
I sort of think it's a little bit like having been a parent. It's a bit like, you know, you always want your kids to have better chances, do better than you did, and you know you want.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that as and when I move on, Warwickshire will be in a better place for that period of time. So you know, it feels to me a little bit like my kid.
Yeah.
Sort of project.
Yeah. But it's like the story about planting trees, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very similar message.
Very much.
You know,
so.
It's a gift to the future.
Yeah.
And our local government in particular, in my view, is a very special thing in Britain.
It is.
It's something to be cherished.
It is.
I know it's very complicated and residents don't always understand differences. Yeah. And
if you started from scratch, you wouldn't always design what you've got now.
As you know, Andrew, sometimes you're not part of the future.
No.
But you have to plan it whether you're there or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got the same coming up this May. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to forecast. But so I need to make sure that whoever wins...
Yeah,
it gets a good start.
Legacy there.
Sure. So exactly, passing on better. Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah.
But let's hope too. I mean, you've got a lot of work ahead of you, and the vision is very clear. But the other benefit of experience, and in both cases, you know, for 10 years as leader, you were very kind to me when I first came in, a surprise to be leader.
Bamboozled you with information.
But you were just quietly sort of nudged me in the direction of one or two things and I think that's important because it is quite a shock when you get a public role that you've got to step up to.
No, it is.
Definitely.
It is. And I think the ability to delegate but still keep control is a really good skill.
Indeed.
Because you can't do everything.
Yeah.
And you need other people to do some of the sort of engine work. So delegation is a key to leadership, understanding when and to what level and what is the report back mechanism. So in effect, your plan is still being worked on, but you can't do it all yourself.
I do think one of the things I did say to you right at that very early stage was you will never stop learning either. You really never stop. I'm learning every day. And I think actually if you lose that hunger for learning, it's the day you need to get off the bus.
Get off the bus completely. Mm-hmm. And again, Izzy, this is another area. You've been very active with the local government association.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a phenomenal body. And I'm not sure many residents realise this, but they provide training and support to councillors of all levels.
Do.
And really, really, I went on the Leadership Academy that's actually run at Warwick University over a couple of weekends. Really good.
It is good, isn't it? It's fantastic. You learn a lot about yourself.
Cross-party as well. It was all in.
Definitely, definitely.
You do actually learn a lot about yourself.
You do. I do actually want to say, I think the other thing that a lot of people might have a misconception that, you know, we're all out, you know, it's you're the blue team, the red team, the green team, the yellow team, you know, and that play. It never really plays that much of a part. You know, I think... you know, back on to the point that you know, it's all about respecting, because it's people who elect other people.
Yes.
And for me, that's important. But, you know, the main thing is, and I think, Philip, you talked about it, is that what we end up doing, whatever changes do or don't happen, the transitions are as smooth as they can be.
Indeed.
Because you leave it in a better place.
I mean, it's what marks out a civilized civic society, really,
hopefully,
compared to places we've seen awful situations elsewhere.
And I think I can honestly say the number of times I mentioned the word conservative in doing my job is probably on the fingers of one hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not about that. It's a way to get elected, or has been in the past. And it probably gives an idea of roughly where I'm coming from. But actually, at the end of the day, I've got to work with Labour councils, Liberal councils, Green, Labour,
whatever.
Coalitions, whatever it might be.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I don't think party politics should come into sorting out local problems.
Hey, I couldn't agree more. Mm. Well, look, thank you very much for coming in and speaking on The Local Point today, Izzy and Philip Seckham. Mm. It's been lovely to talk with you.
Always nice to talk to you, Andrew.
It's warm and cosy in here.
It is.
It's freezing outside. But
how long can we stay?
Yeah, exactly. But it does really, I hope, for all our listeners, actually bring a much better understanding about how our civic society in Warwickshire actually works.
Yeah.
And it does work. And it's been
a
really successful over past and hopefully future as well.
Right.
But thank you again for your time. Nice to see you both.
Thank you.
Lovely to see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's been great having you join our conversations today. Please share any comments or pose questions for future episodes by email to localpoint@icloud.com. Thanks for joining us.